Hello and welcome to the world famous Driving You Crazy podcast. This is the show where we talk about all kinds of things. Transportation. I am the traffic anchor and transportation reporter for Denver 7 News, Jason Luber. And with me today, thanks.
Yes.
Oh, yeah. That's helping so much. We're going to need a little more money for infrastructure because a national transportation research nonprofit group called TRIP, T-R-I-P, says our highway and roadway infrastructure must be improved. And they say it's really bad here in my home state of Colorado, saying the rate of congestion, travel volume, road and bridge deterioration and facilities on Colorado's interstate system are among the highest in the nation. So I wanted to talk more about this problem, not just that's affecting us here in Colorado, but really all over the country, especially in the states that are really seeing a lot of growth. So I've invited Rocky Moretti. He's TRIP's Director of Policy and Research to be here on the show. And TRIP was founded in 1971, nonprofit organization that researches, evaluates, and distributes economic and technical data on surface transportation issues. Rocky Moretti has been with TRIP since 1992, where he researches, writes, and edits numerous state and national reports. Rocky, welcome to the Driving You Crazy podcast.
Thank you, Jason. Thanks for the opportunity to talk to you today.
So overall, the country is seeing, obviously, a deterioration in the infrastructure. It doesn't take much looking around in any state in the nation to really see some infrastructure problems around the country. How bad are the roads and bridges we're driving on right now?
Congress wanted that question answered, and they went to the National Academy of Science and asked for a report on the interstate highway system, the most critical system in the nation. It carries around a quarter of the travel, nearly 40% of all freight moves on the interstate system. The National Academy of Sciences came back last year and said that the interstate highway system has a persistent and growing problem in terms of reliability because of traffic congestion. And a 64-year-old system is just wearing out. And states are doing routine repairs because that's typically all they can afford, but the system's reaching the point where that's really reaching a point of diminishing returns. What's needed will be the reconstruction of major components of that system, bridges, major interchanges, not just a simple repaving, but actually pulling up those subsurfaces and redoing those interstates. As you would anticipate, that's not going to be cheap. That report found that the current investment, about $23 billion a year nationally, needs to be more than double. So that's where we stand. The interstate system is the backbone of our transportation system, but it's a backbone that's really starting to bend.
Yeah, and it seems that it's not bending as much in some states as it is in other states. And it seems like it's also bending and being more rigid depending on if you're on an interstate highway or a U.S. highway or a state highway. Are those, you think, equally as bad, or you think there are some states that are doing a better job of keeping maybe their infrastructure up compared to the overall federal highways?
If you look at simple data on road and bridge conditions or even traffic fatality rates, those get worse once you leave the interstate system. The interstate system is a lot safer because of the design of the roadway, the limited access to vehicles and so forth. And so you see greater safety, and most of the high levels of traffic fatalities are on the rural system and really on any roads once you're off the interstate system. Similarly with bridge conditions, you see bridge conditions are typically worse off the interstate system, and that's also true of pavements. What's different, of course, is the interstate system is the most heavily traveled system and most critical to not only mobility regionally, but also within urban areas. And so the challenge of rebuilding that system becomes even greater. If you look across the country, what you'll find is the problems break down to some extent regionally. In western states like Colorado, Utah, Arizona, a number of western states, growth is the huge challenge. And in Colorado, as we pointed out in our report this week, the level of travel increase on the interstate system increased by 51%. At the same time, additional lane capacity on the interstate system in Colorado increased by 3%. So as you would expect, there's a lot more cars and trucks on the road. There's a lot more traffic congestion on Colorado's freeways, but we're seeing that particularly in high growth areas.
I want to get back to that point in just a second, but you were mentioning in your response about the difference between the U.S. highways and interstates, and the interstates are safer. Generally, they are because they're either generally divided by a specific concrete divider or maybe even cable rail. On U.S. highways or other rural highways, it could be just a double yellow line that's separating the oncoming traffic from each other. So I think that makes it inherently more dangerous off the interstate system than on it.
That's right. And what we've seen is that when you make the additional roadway safety design improvements, there's a good example out of Texas that systematically invested a lot of money in its rural system, just simple cost-effective strategies, adding rumble strips, paving some shoulders, improving the design of some intersections, and they saw fatalities drop dramatically on those rural systems. Now, we also know that we're not blaming the roads when people get killed. It's ultimately typically a poor decision or a mistake or an impaired driver. But when you make those additional roadway safety improvements, it tends to reduce the results of someone making a mistake. And so traffic safety is really a function of good enforcement, good public education, but then also having a roadway driving environment that's as safe as possible.
Now, according to Tripp's report from 2000 to 2018, vehicle travel on at least the Colorado interstates, it increased, and I think you mentioned part of this, at a rate of 17 times faster than the rate of which new lane capacity has been added. As a result, Colorado's interstates are now the third busiest and the 11th most congested in the United States. Obviously, these are pre-COVID numbers, since COVID has happened, and we'll talk about that maybe in a little bit. Traffic patterns and obviously volume has changed dramatically. But do you think Tripp is saying now that if Colorado invested in more travel lanes over that last 20 years or so, there would be less congestion? And if so, does that suggest we can build our way out of congestion?
Adding additional capacity, and typically when additional capacity is built into the system, it's along existing routes. Now, the National Academy of Sciences also pointed out that there were some places where there were essentially missing links in the system, which was designed largely in terms of the routes in the 1940s and 50s, and in the West is still playing catch-up because of obviously the significant growth. But to get back to your point, I think the challenge is to recognize that there is some additional capacity that's appropriate to add, but it's certainly not going to be at the same level or rate of travel growth, and that's partly due to the fact that the cost of that, in some corridors, it's not appropriate for a variety of reasons. So really, we're looking at using the system as efficiently as possible, particularly in urban areas. There's a lot of things with ramp metering, with incident management. States are increasingly investing in making sure that when there's a breakdown or a crash, that it's dealt with as quickly as possible. In fact, the general approach by state and local transportation agencies increasingly is to take a holistic approach to look at the overall issue, from how are we dealing with crashes, how are we trying to use the system as efficiently as possible, and so you really, how are, in terms of traffic management strategies, informing the public of travel times. The challenge is to make the system as reliable as possible. So we're suggesting that adding some capacity along certain corridors is certainly going to be part of that, particularly in areas with high growth. But sometimes it can be very smaller incremental steps. I was in Boston several months ago, pre-COVID, a conference on traffic congestion. And, in urban Boston, it's unlikely that you can add capacity on some of those highways through very tightly packed urban areas, but there were a variety of small bottlenecks, intersections without turn lanes, a variety of things that could be addressed realistically to essentially address some of the gridlock in those regions. So it's really an approach that makes sense for each region. Certainly additional capacity is part of that, but oftentimes that capacity can be really not turn lanes or a variety
of less impactful improvements that can go a long way to making the system more reliable.
You mentioned incident management. Here in Colorado, our Department of Transportation has been for as long as I can remember, maybe 25 years, working, and they call it the Mile High Courtesy Patrol. And basically, there are a couple of tow trucks. They used to have them as independent contractors working for the state during the morning and afternoon commute. They would just roll up and down the interstates and help out disabled vehicles, give gas if they needed to, assist the police with blocking lanes, and then tow or move the cars if they were in a crash or just disabled off to the shoulder. So it would open up the lanes, and it was really a program by the Department of Transportation that has been instrumental in keeping our highways better flowing in general than maybe in other parts of the country. And it's been a very successful program. And then you were also mentioning about the ramp meters. Well, and maybe you're not familiar with this, but I just posted a story a couple weeks ago about a program that our Department of Transportation is working on with a couple of companies out of Australia to do smart meter ramp usage, where they are actually going to monitor the amount of traffic flow on the mainline part of the interstate and then adjust the amount of traffic that can get onto the interstate and hold traffic back onto some of the feeder routes a little bit longer to get an overall trip acceleration through those main highway. So it's going to be an interesting test program that they're going to test over the next 6 months, and that should start here this fall.
And those are the types of approaches. It's not a simple set of solutions. It's a broader context. And what we haven't talked about, obviously, is funding. Transportation agencies across the country have a very good sense of what it takes to make a system more reliable. The challenge, obviously, is being able to fund it, and that's a challenge both at the state level and also at federally. We see two opportunities in the short term that could have dramatic impacts on the transportation system in Colorado, but nationally.
Is that what got us to this point of poor infrastructure, poor roadways? Is it just the lack of money?
The National Academy of Sciences report to Congress said that it was a long-term lack of adequate investment that has led to the deterioration of the interstate highway system, but you can really look across the country. In Colorado, the latest estimates from the Department of Transportation is that they should be spending an additional $533 million annually to address the transportation projects they see that are critically needed. And then if you look at the current deliberations in Washington over a stimulus package, during COVID, it's been estimated that so far state transportation agencies have lost $16 billion in revenue because people are driving less, so paying less gas taxes, contributing less in toll fees. And the House stimulus package has addressed that to some extent. I think there was $13 billion in that package. And the estimate is that overall states will lose around $37 billion. So now we see the Senate also discussing that package. That's going to be critical because state transportation departments this year have already cut $9 billion in projects. If they don't get that money from the federal government, those are improvements in the safety of the system and the reliability of the system and just basic preservation that aren't going to happen. And then a very critical source of funding in Colorado, but across the country, is the Surface Transportation Program at the federal level. Well, that program expires at the end of September. The House has put forward a new bill that significantly would boost that funding, although the House bill also comes with a fair amount of red tape that candidly would tie the hands of state transportation agencies in determining which projects are the most critical in a region. And the Senate has had some initial discussions, but aren't at the point yet where they have moved forward with a comprehensive program. So the clock's ticking on the federal program, and state transportation agencies obviously have to be very conservative in their investments until they see how that plays out.
I'm speaking with Rocky Moretti. He's TRIP's Director of Policy and Research about the state of our roads and our infrastructure. Famously, the people of Colorado over the last several years have voted down three major times a tax increase or bond measure to fund transportation. And that's just here in Colorado. It's different in other states where I know in Utah they have passed legislation to raise their gas tax, and their roads seem to be much better than the roads here in Colorado. Now, is this a time, if we can't get the funding, obviously, in Colorado because the people don't want to vote for it, is it time to look at road usage fees, at registration fees? Is it time to shift how money is coming into these Department of Transportations with fewer people driving, as you mentioned, fewer people paying gas tax, and fewer dollars are coming into the states?
Well, we've put out reports in Colorado pointing out that when you don't make adequate investments, then there are certainly going to be costs related to that. So the bottom line is that when you're not able to adequately maintain the system, then you're going to see additional costs in terms of maintaining your vehicles. There's a cost involved in being stuck in traffic, and so you're losing time there. And then finally, there's also significant costs to traffic crashes. Our last report found that in Colorado statewide, that cost is $8 billion annually to the public. And that is the cost of more road repairs to your vehicles, because the rougher roads, the rougher the shape roads are in, two things happen. Your vehicle obviously is getting beaten up driving on those roads that are in poor condition, but it also means your vehicle's wearing out more quickly. In terms of traffic fatalities and serious traffic crashes, we can't estimate the real cost of a traffic fatality, which is obviously the devastation to a family. But we can look at those economic costs, and that's well over $2 billion in Colorado annually. And then the estimate of a congestion cost is just looking at the value of time. This is based on research done annually by the Texas Transportation Institute. That's around $3 billion in Colorado. So, you know, our message is that certainly improving the transportation system, making it more reliable, making it safer, and maintaining it, takes an investment. There's no doubt about that. But there's also a significant cost in when you don't make those repairs.
Looking at some of the worst congested urban interstates on your list, California comes in at number one. And surprisingly, at least to me, maybe Maryland number two, maybe you're including Washington, D.C. in there, New Jersey at number three, and Delaware at number four. I could see Florida at number five, Massachusetts with Boston at number six, but Delaware at number four and Rhode Island at number seven, Connecticut at number eight. It seems interesting that some of the smallest states have some of the most urban congested interstates.
Well, I think what you're looking at there is the Northeast Corridor between Washington, D.C. and Baltimore. And so in the case of Delaware and Rhode Island, right on those corridors, most of their, you know, I-95 goes right through there. And that's why, you know, another very important statistic that you're referencing, in addition to the share of urban interstates that are congested, is to actually look at travel per lane mile on urban interstates. Colorado ranks third there. This is based on 2018 data, the latest data that's available, right behind California and Maryland. So it shows you just how heavily traveled those urban freeways in Colorado are.
Well, yeah, in the interstate volume increase, you have Nevada at number one, Louisiana at number two, then North Carolina, Utah, Colorado, and Texas, all very fast-growing states. We've talked a lot about how Las Vegas is growing pretty quickly, how Louisiana has come back after Katrina and growing quite quickly, and North Carolina obviously growing quite quickly as well. So some of those states, I think, have some interesting challenges when it comes to their transportation system and how congested their highways have become.
That's right. TRIP put out a report last year looking at freight transportation in the country. And what became clear from that is the impact of Amazon and other organizations that have really changed the supply chain network And then COVID has taken that to a whole higher level in terms of the demand for the movement of small products and moved quickly. What we're seeing is a tremendous increase in large trucks moving across the country. Now, again, during the pandemic, the nation's supply chain literally was our lifeline. Now, as we move through perhaps the mid period of the pandemic and hopefully towards a resolution to some extent into the next year, I think we've seen some subtle long-term changes in our economy. I think they're all going to favor increased trucking. It seems that the public is starting to get back to travel levels similar to what we saw before COVID. So I think looking into the future, we have a very mature, aging transportation system, certainly the interstate system. And it really starts with a long-term, well-funded, reliably funded, very critically, federal program. And then also at the state level, ensuring that the state is making the investments that are necessary. And then also local governments as well. So I think really the thinking needs to be, you know, as we get through this pandemic and we look into the future, what are some key building blocks of infrastructure? Obviously, the transportation system is a very vital part of that.
Well, and not to pick on the truckers, but I've understood from talking to some engineers at our Department of Transportation that one fully loaded truck can do as much wear and tear on the roads as about 9,000 passenger vehicles. Is there any talk about maybe addressing that issue since we have increased the amount of trucks and deliveries that are on the roads, that the roads are going to be suffering because of that increased demand to ship goods and services across the country and locally?
Well, it certainly increases the need and the investment level that's required to maintain our roads, highways, and bridges with those larger volumes of freight. The report, again, based on a very thorough ongoing federal database, anticipates that the value of freight moved by trucks and really by all modes over the next 20 years is going to double. So we're going to be seeing more freight being shipped across the country. That's very critical to our quality of life, but we need to have the infrastructure in place that can support that level of mobility for freight movement.
Do you think they should be paying more than everybody else in their average car because they are contributing to more of the deterioration of the infrastructure?
Well, trucks, both through federal taxes, starting with the gas tax, and then also in states that have also weight fees, generally have shown a willingness to pay additionally for the system. You also see when they get onto a toll system that they have to pay additional funds as well. So, you know, they are, and we've seen that the truckers organizations have shown a willingness to pay additional funds, recognizing that really their whole system requires a good transportation system.
Yes, and the Trip Report also does find some good news based on the relative safety of our interstate system, as we talked about earlier. And the report also says that the pavement smoothness on most segments of the U.S. interstate is, quote, acceptable, and saying the crumbling foundations of most highway segments needs to be reconstructed, and that continued resurfacing rather than addressing the underlying foundational issues provides diminishing returns and results in shorter periods of pavement smoothness. Now, does that suggest that we might need to just tear down the interstates to bare soil and then start again, build it over top of that?
Well, that was a recognition that increasing what states are doing, obviously, with limited resources, is trying to go in and resurface those systems. But what the engineers are finding is that resurfacing that used to last for maybe 5 years now no longer lasts as long, because what's happening is that almost like a repair on your house. You know, you might get away with throwing up a few extra shingles when you have a leak, but if you're not dealing with what's underneath those shingles, eventually
small repairs are not going to get the job done. And so that's what's starting to happen with the interstate system, is that states are recognizing they're going to have to make the far more significant investment of taking a highway that's been basically on top of a sub base built in the 1950s and digging that system up and rebuilding it. And as you would anticipate, that's going to be a significant expense and a long-term expense. And so states are looking at additional ways to raise that funding. And then we're seeing a trend in urban areas to look at adding some additional lanes that are managed lanes, which essentially means that if there's going to be some additional highway capacity in some urban areas, adding a cost to it as a way to bring in additional revenue.
Colorado is, toll lane crazy. We have gone on the express lane bandwagon in a big way, and they're building them all around the Front Range between Fort Collins and Boulder and Denver and going on down to Colorado Springs. Two final questions for you. How do you think COVID is going to change the data set for everything that you're looking into, because it has really changed how traffic has traffic patterns have changed and really have been shifted just because of our now post-COVID world? And how long do you think it might take before we are back into some kind of a pre-COVID level of traffic?
Sure. We saw obviously a tremendous decrease in travel. We've been looking at the monthly numbers, and then there's also been organizations based on things, cell phone data, looking at that huge reduction. Now, in May, it began to come back. In most regions, it's travel volumes are back within 10 or 15% of pre-COVID. As we move into the fall, it seems that at some point it's going to move back, but it'll probably be based on what's happening with the economy. And obviously that falls into, what happens on the medical front, whether it's a vaccine or improved therapies, and obviously well outside my knowledge base. But it seems likely that whether it's by next year or 2022, we're going to see travel back at the same level. And the country, I think, is poised for long-term significant economic growth. We know the country is going to add significant population over the next 20 or 30 years. And so I think those trends will continue. There may be subtle trends because of COVID in terms of how people choose to travel. Will there be more working at home? I think the reality is that what we'll see is some of the ongoing trends that were true before COVID may be accelerated somewhat post-pandemic. But at the end of the day, I think we're going to see the demand for mobility across the country, not just for highways and cars, but really for all modes, continuing to increase into the future.
Yeah, I think it could be a while before we start to really see other modes of transportation, buses, motor coaches, the trains, obviously aircraft, to pick up as fast as driving across the country. When you're in a car by yourself or your quarantined family, if you will, I think people think that is and feel much safer doing that than they do jumping on an airplane, even if the Congress does pass some kind of legislation that keeps the middle seat open for an undetermined amount of time.
Certainly modes where people it's easier to control the environment, whether that's driving or even riding a bicycle or being a pedestrian, are going to be, the public are going to feel more confident in until we move ahead in addressing this pandemic.
Well, Rocky Moretti, thank you so much for your insight, your expertise on this. Rocky is the TRIPS Director of Policy and Research, and we were talking about the state of our roads and infrastructure. Thanks again for all your time and insight.
Thank you, Jason. I'd be glad to come back anytime.
All right. Thanks again, Rocky. Appreciate the information there. All it takes is a little bit of money, Nicole. All we need is a little money, and all of our highways, our bridges, everything,
just
the infrastructure will just be perfect. All we need is just a little bit of money. Little bit.
Little.
That's all it takes.
Yeah.